The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Without freedom of the press, no democratic form of government could exist.
We switch you now to London.
I'm standing on a rooftop, looking out over London.
Good night, and good luck.
Good evening from our CBS newsroom in New York.
NBC presents Chet Huntley and David Brinkley.
From ABC, this is World News Tonight. With Peter Jennings in London, Max Robinson in Chicago, and from our desk in Washington, Frank Reynolds.
Good evening.
This historic legislation, the telecommunications law, will create many, many high wage jobs, will create opportunity and better lives for all Americans.
When the press is free, the people of a country are free. When the press is not free, the people of a country are in danger of slavery.
Keeping you informed with information, news, and the views of people making the news. It's the Nicole Sandler Show on NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
It seems that every day Trump gets away with another gaffe or blunder. Dissing allies, praising foes, stepping on a queen's toes. So once again we wonder, are we there yet? Has he finally gone too far? Are we there yet? Could the news get more bizarre? Nothing seems to thwart the core of his support. Do we even have a prayer yet? I thought Access Hollywood would finish him for good, or his illiterate Twitter rages. Being such a lechy dad, saying Nazis aren't so bad, putting immigrant kids in cages. Aren't we there yet? With a cabinet so corrupt, aren't we there yet? All the porn stars that he shtupped, what's it gonna take to prove the guy's a flake to a base that doesn't care yet? You'd think at least a few Republicans would object to genuflecting to Putin, but those Fifth Avenue Republicans don't care who or what Trump's shooting. As long as they can decimate the safety net and the environment and voting rights and reproductive choice and LGBTQ protections, etc. Are we there yet? Now he's started a trade war. Are we there yet? It's like 1984. Watch him brazenly deny reality till we're tearing out our hair yet. So incoherent, he sounds demented. How many ways can you say unprecedented? What'll end the despair of our national nightmare before we all swear? Are we there yet?
Ah, the very talented Lauren Mayer with Are We There Yet? One of her, obviously humorous songs. Welcome to the show. It's a Wednesday. I'm Nicole Sandler, coming to you at NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network. And I started with one of Lauren's piano pieces today because we're celebrating Joel Silberman. Joel, as many of you know, his job, day job, I suppose, was as a media and message strategist. He trained people from, you know, politicians to business leaders to activists on how to speak more effectively, how to get the message out. Let me start. I was going to play this right before the interview, but last week, in fact, we got the news that Joel died on Thursday morning, which was the first day of Netroots Nation, which is a gathering of progressives every year that I used to go to. Joel was always there. This year, I ran Thursday through Saturday, and Elizabeth Warren spoke. She was one of the keynote speakers, and I want to play for you the beginning of her address to Netroots Nation.
You know, before I get started, I've been to a lot of Netroots Nations. And at every single one of them, my friend, our friend, Joel Silberman, has been backstage to give me advice and to cheer me on. He taught so many of us how to stand taller and how to speak louder for the people we fight for. His passing is a tremendous loss for our community, and my heart goes out to the many of you who loved him. So, I can hear Joel's voice. He's telling me to get on with it.
and he so would I have will. To. So that was Elizabeth Warren speaking at Netroots Nation last week after the news broke that we lost our dear, dear friend Joel Silberman. Now, Joel was a regular on this program every Monday for about a year until I was diagnosed with lung cancer. And I went on a hiatus to have surgery and recover and everything. When I came back, the show was shortened. I went down to an hour a day, 4 days a week. And he instead of coming on every week, he would come on sporadically. It was last June that Joel himself was diagnosed with pancreatic cancer. And he still, you know, his attitude was one of amazing gratitude. It was just the positivity with which he lived, and he imparted that to everyone around him. So I thought what we'd do today is play back his last appearance on the show. It was in March. It was March 2nd, actually. I've heard from so many of you who, sent your condolences and commiserated and said that Joel was always your favorite guest. That you look forward to Mondays when Joel was on. So we'll have one last get-together with Joel today. Before we get to that, as always, there's news to cover, so let's get this out of the way fast, shall we?
I read the news today. Oh, boy.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
Well, the special election in Ohio's 12th congressional district is still too close to call, with Republican Troy Balderson leading Democrat Danny O'Connor by 1,754 votes. More than 3,300 provisional ballots have yet to be counted. That shows there's a problem in Ohio. Even if Balderson does win, the fact that the race was so competitive should prompt some concern from the Republicans. Of course, Donald Trump, as he does, already declared Balderson the winner in a premature early morning tweet. Here's a report from CNN.
If Ohio's 12th district is any indication, a blue wave may be coming in November. In a special election that many considered a bellwether for the midterms, the race between Republican Troy Balderson and Democrat Danny O'Connor is still too close to call this morning. An encouraging outcome for Democrats in a deep red district, no matter how it plays out in the end. There are still over 8,000 outstanding provisional and absentee ballots that could take days to count. Now, Balderson currently leads O'Connor by less than one percentage point. Both candidates spoke late last night, O'Connor refusing to concede, Balderson quick to claim victory.
I'd like to thank President Trump.
Yeah.
America is on the right path, and we're going to keep it going that way. Over the next 3 months, I'm going to do everything I can to keep America great again.
As we see division and discord tearing apart our country, we must remember that each and every one of us are God's children, and that all of us need to be treated with dignity and respect. And I think we could use a lot more of that spirit in Washington these days.
Now, President Trump taking time out from his vacation schedule to declare Balderson the winner and take credit for it, even though the outcome is not yet official. President tweeting, quote, "When I decided to go to Ohio for Troy Balderson, he was down in early voting 64-36. That was not good. After my speech on Saturday night, there's a big turn for the better. Now Troy wins a great victory during a very tough time of year for voting. He will win big in November." I would just note, that's not how early voting or results or momentum actually works.
No, it isn't. He needs to get over his narcissistic self. There are 68 GOP-held House seats in contention that should be more favorable to Democrats than Ohio's 12th district. Democrats need to flip 23 seats to win control of the House. Labor groups have won a big victory in Missouri after voters overturned the state's new right-to-work law in an embarrassing defeat for the state's Republican lawmakers. Score one for the good guys. In the race to replace former Representative John Conyers of Michigan, former state rep Rashida Tlaib, T-L-A-I-B is how you spell her name. I'm not quite sure how to pronounce it. She secured the nomination in a heavily Democratic seat. That means she will likely become the first Muslim woman elected to Congress. The Republicans' primary for Kansas governor also remains too close to call. Trump-backed conservative asshole Kris Kobach over the incumbent governor Jeff Collier in the race. Some Republicans are worried that Kobach would be a disastrous general election candidate, potentially costing the GOP a governor's race in a deep red Kansas. Well, good. Couldn't happen to a nicer party. Voters in St. Louis County have ousted Robert McCulloch. You remember that name? He's the prosecutor who refused to bring charges in the police shooting death of Michael Brown in Ferguson. Yeah, the winner was a guy named Wesley Bell, a city council member in Ferguson. So there are some good progressive victories here. What else is going on? According to Forbes magazine, Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross could be, quote, among the biggest grifters in American history. An investigation citing 21 people who've worked with him claim Ross stole, quote, a few million here and a few million there from various companies. Forbes reports, quote, all told, these allegations, which sparked lawsuits, reimbursements, and a Security and Exchange Commission fine, come to more than $120 million. Ross's former colleagues offer very unkind words about him. They say he's obsessed with money, with two former colleagues recounting that he took handfuls of sweet and low packets from a restaurant near his office so he didn't have to go out and buy some for himself. Just so you know, a Ross spokesman disputed that claim and denied that he sweetens his coffee. Okay. The courtroom showdown between Paul Manafort and his former business partner grew painful yesterday as a defense lawyer hammered Rick Gates, the prosecution's star witness, forcing him to admit he embezzled money years ago to fund a transatlantic romance. It's like a soap opera.
Star witness Rick Gates back on the stand, admitting during a harsh cross-examination to having an extramarital affair a decade ago, but denying accusations by Paul Manafort's lawyer that he was embezzling money from Manafort in order to fund his affair and what the defense attorney referred to as a secret life in London and elsewhere. Gates also testified that 2 weeks after Donald Trump's election, Paul Manafort recommended that his banker, Stephen Kwok, become Secretary of the Army. Kwok allegedly loaned Manafort money under false pretenses. Gates detailed how broke Manafort was when he joined the Trump campaign in March 2016, working at the time for no salary. Gates said that Manafort's consulting firm had no clients then, and that they were at the time trying to secure another political consulting contract in Ukraine, but had not yet been able to. In a 2015 email exchange, Manafort was clearly frustrated. WTF, Manafort wrote to Gates. How could I be blindsided like this, Manafort said. This after learning that taxes he was due to pay were much higher than he had anticipated. Gates admitted that he also supplied false information to banks in order to help Manafort secure bank loans. Gates testified that Manafort made more than $5 million between 2011 and 2012, doing consulting work for a Ukrainian billionaire. Gates went into detail about how shell companies were used to move money into hidden accounts in Cyprus. In one instance, according to Gates, a payment supported lobbying in the United States. Gates stated that Manafort reported some of the payments to U.S. tax officials as loans, though they were, in fact, income, adding that Manafort was, quote, trying to decrease his taxable income. Prosecutors demonstrated that Manafort directed these activities through emails. There were hundreds of these, Gates said in court, adding, quote, typical practice was Mr. Manafort would send me a list of wire requests. Gates admitted that he used information provided by Manafort to create invoices for fake amounts of money for wire transfers. But the money never actually went to the vendors. Instead, it went to the banks. The purpose of this, according to Gates, so that the wire transfers would not be recorded on U.S. business records. Nonetheless, on Monday, the prosecutors elicited testimony from Mr. Gates and from one of Mr. Manafort's accountants that tied Manafort more closely to Russia. The accountant, Cindy LaPorta, testified that in 2006, Mr. Manafort received a $10 million loan from Oleg Deripaska, a Russian oligarch close to President Vladimir Putin. Ms. LaPorta said she saw no evidence the loan was ever repaid.
Oh, but Trump only hired the best people, right? Right. You'll love this story. Three of Trump's cronies from his Mar-a-Lago resort, including the reclusive Marvel Entertainment chairman Ike Perlmutter, have been quietly pulling the strings at the Department of Veterans Affairs for months. This according to documents and interviews cited by ProPublica yesterday. This is a wild story. Documents obtained by the news site via the Freedom of Information Act reportedly showed the three men exercising unprecedented influence over the VA, including by shaping policies, making personnel decisions, and speaking with top VA officials on a daily basis. Perlmutter, a longtime Trump acquaintance, is reportedly joined by a lawyer named Mark Sherman and a Palm Beach doctor by the name of Bruce Moskowitz in leading the behind-the-scenes VA operation. None of these three men hold any government posts that would explain their involvement in VA policies, nor are any veterans. None of them. According to the report, the ProPublica report, their influence on the VA is well known among administration officials, and some officials have even traveled to Mar-a-Lago on taxpayers' dime to speak with the men about their desires for the VA. A former administration official was quoted as saying, "Everyone has to go down and kiss the ring." Every day, it just gets worse and worse. And one final story. Republican Congressman Chris Collins has been charged with multiple felonies of securities fraud, wire fraud, and false statements for alleged insider trading with his son Collins. Collins was the first sitting member of Congress to endorse Trump's presidential bid. Figures, right? All right. More on that, I'm sure, tomorrow. And as the day goes on, apparently Collins still insists he's running for re-election. Yeah. All right. Now let's go on. That's a bit of what's news for now. And thank you for listening. All right. This is what we've been waiting for. As I mentioned at the top and, earlier in the week, it was a tough one. It's always tough when you lose someone that you care about. But we lost a really special man in Joel Silberman. He was one of my favorite people. Certainly, I was honored to have him as a guest on this show so many times. So I thought the best way I could pay tribute to Joel would be to pull out his last appearance here and share it with you again, just to, spread the gospel of Joel. So with no further ado, let's go back to March 2nd, 2018.
And now it's time to cut through the media bullshit with Joel Silberman of DemocracyPartners.com on the Nicole Sandler Show.
As I told you before, Joel Silberman was a regular guest on this program for a long time before I was out on hiatus after I got sick. And he's one of the people I get asked about most often from the old days of the program. And I'm thrilled to welcome Joel Silberman, media strategist and trainer, back to the program today. Hello, Joel.
Hello, Nicole. I am thrilled to be back.
And it's great to have you down here. You're actually in Fort Lauderdale as we speak, which is a good thing because there's a big honking storm up north. D.C. is shut down today.
Timing is everything.
Yes, it
and
is.
And I have to say that I'm thrilled to be here. Florida has lived up to its name, the Sunshine State, and I have had a great time in the sunshine.
Well, that's good.
It's been grand.
It's healing. And I was talking a little bit earlier about the last time you were on the program. I can't believe I think it was June the last time you were here. And you told us of your diagnosis. And I get more questions about how you're doing from listeners than really about anybody or anything else. So you want to fill us in on what's happening with you?
Well, I'm doing very well. I feel excellent. I have no symptoms, despite the fact that I am in stage 4 metastatic pancreatic cancer. Now, the good news, they shrunk my tumor so much that I had a Whipple procedure, which just means that I met Mac the Knife and I wasn't singing and had my insides rearranged, which is how they deal with pancreatic cancer, and they got the whole thing with clean margins. But about, I guess it's 6 weeks after that, they discovered that the pancreatic cancer had reappeared, and that meant I had metastatic pancreatic cancer. That's the bad news. Again, the good news, that meant I qualified for a clinical trial of a new immunotherapy drug by Bristol Myers Squibb, and I can't believe I'm saying that I'm rooting for a drug company,
right?
Because as all of you that know me know, that's not somebody I'd be rooting for. However, I am this time, because they've had this drug out and it is done well with other cancers. They've modified it to approach pancreatic, and I believe I have a very good chance for remission. So Monday, when I go back to Baltimore, we begin the process of a clinical trial. And that's where I am. I'm very optimistic. I am positive, and I'm grateful.
Your attitude of gratitude is really what gets me. As I said, you make me feel better every time I talk to you. You've managed to keep this great attitude going, and I guess, you know, that's the choice that you can make, is you take it on with that attitude, or you let it defeat you, and you're not the kind of person who lets something like this defeat you.
Well, when I consider the reality is that in life, always the only thing we can control is our attitude. We can't control our circumstances. They are the circumstances. We can control how we react to the circumstances. And that's always been how I've lived my life. So this is no different. I just feel like it's the only attitude. I'm grateful that I have Medicare. I'm grateful that I live in a country where progressives repealed the Marriage Act that didn't allow me to marry my husband. So I married him, and we have great secondary insurance because of that. I'm grateful that I have all those things. At the same time, I'm an activist for everybody that doesn't have all those things, because it's about time we saw universal health care. It's about time that we said to the insurance companies profiting off of people's sickness, this is not your profit center. Your profit center can be elsewhere, but not here. And I'm actively campaigning for that every day, because I know how it's saving my life and saving Michael and I from being bankrupt.
Right. And you know, I never thought I'd wish for the day that I'd get to 65, but at only 58, I'm just a spry young thing. I've got years to go before I get on Medicare. I'm good for this year, for 2018, but I've still got that stress hanging behind me going, what's going to happen in 2019? There's no guarantees that I'll even be able to get insurance.
I know it.
Millions
and that's
of others.
Bothers me the most. I know people in your boat. I know so many people that I read about every day, and it really bothers me. This is the richest country in the world, and this is not what we should be having here.
No. And so it's something we keep fighting for. Now, in addition to your fight against cancer, you've remained active. You're still working and doing producing events and training people. And so what are you up to now? What's going on in your life?
Well, 2 weeks ago, I trained a class of 20 amazing progressives for the Progressive Change Campaign Committee, PCCC. Mm-hmm. And let me tell you, these progressives are going to win. I worked with Randy Bryce, who is running against Paul Ryan.
Awesome.
An iron worker, a blue collar man, and I think he'll win because Paul Ryan forgot that he's from Wisconsin, along the other things that Paul Ryan forget. I trained so many amazing candidates, people that will win their races, people that we will see in Congress, people that will be looking at old congressional people and saying the words that so many people in Congress need to hear. Thank you for your service. Don't let the door hit you on the ass on the way out.
Right.
Because it's time. It's time. I've seen it. I really feel as though young people can't possibly vote for people that don't look like them. And we have to start dealing with the reality of what the Democratic base looks like and who they are. Because, you know, when we keep trying to convert people that will never vote for us, rather than go out and get the 36% of people that didn't vote in 2016 because they couldn't hold their nose or because they didn't see any difference in the candidates. And I defy those people today, looking at a White House that is truly imploding, to say there's no difference in the candidates. But we need to go out and get them. We need millennials. I mean, look what's happened in the town next to yours.
Yep.
millennials are actually leading. And when we hear that fabulous young woman call BS, I'm warning the congressional leaders every day that unless they start doing something, people will call BS on them.
It feels like a groundswell, at least on this one issue, and that's all it takes sometimes is one issue to get the ball rolling, and there couldn't be a more important one. I don't know if you heard, there have been already today, I think, two more shootings. There was one.
Yeah, I heard.
In Detroit, and another one. It's insane. We've got to get a handle on this, and it is the young people who are standing up and making noise. So eloquently and beautifully as well. You must cavil when you see them.
Well, there's a young man named David, I believe it's Hogg, H-O-G-G.
Yes.
I saw him on Reliable Sources, and he had Dan Rather and Brian Stetler speechless. Right. And finally, Brian Stetler said, "How are you this eloquent?" And he said, "Well, I'm in debate class, and as a part of the debate team, we have to research and we have to make our argument." It was brilliant. This was not some boy speaking with valley speech. I didn't hear one, you know, or one like, or one He was eloquent, he was elegant, and he was plain spoken.
Mm-hmm.
It was fantastic. And I'm using him to play because this weekend coming up, a week from today, I will be addressing the Progressive Caucus Center's Strategy Summit, and I'll be talking to 30 members of Congress and a whole lot of organizations. And I'm going to tell them point blank that they are being shamed by adolescents for seizing a media narrative, for making an issue important by speaking their values. That's what they're doing, and it's fantastic.
It is. No, they're truly inspiring. The young woman that you mentioned who called BS, her name is Emma Gonzalez. She was never on Twitter, and she started a Twitter account. She's now surpassed, you know, a lot of the people who are giving her a hard time, the NRA and Dana Loesch and those. She's got over a million followers now, and she started something. I am so proud of these young people, and it makes me think a little bit better of the Florida school system, of which I was not too impressed before.
You know, it's funny. I've just spent a week in your lovely state. And you and I have talked about Florida as Florida.
Yes.
And it's been very interesting to be here in Fort Lauderdale and see a different Fort Lauderdale than I saw 25 years ago. I'm very encouraged by what I'm seeing. I've enjoyed so much being in Florida that we're actually looking at buying a home here.
Wow.
Because it is a spectacular place to be. But these children are telling us something else. They are media savvy. This is the product of having smartphones in your hand from a young age, having chips in your brain because you're the generation that has inherited all of this. They have more information, and all they need really is the motivation and rallying cry to use that rather than sit still. And when their life, literally their life, is in danger, they got plenty of motivation. And I think we've seen that now in a way that I haven't seen since we fought for marriage equality.
Right.
That's the last time I saw a movement move quickly.
Right. Well, what encourages me, see, Parkland is a very upscale area. There's a lot of money there. And these people, obviously benefit from that as well, you know, in terms of having a great school. With the resources that help them to get this great education they got. What I'm encouraged about are all the other schools in the state that have, you know, glommed on, that are doing marches, that are walking out, that are participating around the country. This march they're going to have on March 24th. I mean, the fact that these kids spearheaded that and are inspiring other high school kids around the country to participate is enormous. That's what gives me hope, more than just Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School, which I would expect it from, given, you know, given the resources of that area, but seeing the neighboring towns come in as well is encouraging.
Well, you're right, because this is an actual poster for public education.
Mm-hmm.
That we are, we have the ability, let me put it to you this way, we have the ability to give our kids a great education all over this country if we seize the opportunity. We're not going to do it on this administration's idea of just giving money to the rich through tax cuts, mm-hmm. because that's where schools get hurt, is when that happens, because communities that aren't as wealthy as Parkland will be hurt in their school budgets. But, you know, I donate every month to something called Donors Choose. And Donors Choose was started by Charles Best to help teachers who are putting money out of their pocket every day so that children can have everything they need in their schools. I have a personal passion, which is music education. So I have bought keyboards for school systems
wow.
around the country for choirs to practice on and for children to have really good instruments, because I believe in it. But again, it shows me that America is a generous country, that we're basically a progressive country, not a center-right country. We are not a selfish country the way the NRA and the conservative minority would like us to feel. We are people that care about each other. And we need now more than ever to demand the media report those stories, demand that the media shows us for who we are, not for who's going to make them the most money by monetizing rage.
Right. Right. Although, you know, here we veer into the world of media, which is, you know, your expertise, Joel Silberman. And since we spoke, I don't know if we ever spoke about what's happening with the media, with Sinclair Broadcasting, with the takeover of what's left of the media. You know, we've lost so many progressive voices on the airwaves. Of course, Air America went away almost a decade ago. And we're left with ragtag little shows, you know, like mine on the internet and some progressive programming on MSNBC. And that's about free speech TV. And that's about it. Where the right seems to have a monopoly over our media. And in the case of Sinclair, they're still just starting to take over local television stations with massive doses of right wing propaganda.
Well, Sinclair is a huge danger. The fact, one of the byproducts of the awfulness of this administration is that this FCC is the most disgraceful.
Mm-hmm.
That merger should be rejected out of hand. That merger never, never, never should happen. But we are looking at the corporate takeover of broadcast media, certainly, and the corporate running of cable media. So it is only going to be independent media that gives us any hope at all for something resembling a truth or anything resembling an objective truth. I am horrified that the Sinclair merger hasn't attracted more attention, but not surprised. I know that Sinclair is required, every one of their local stations is required to run these horrible propaganda pieces that are right-wing smears, that are Fox News on steroids,
mm-hmm.
And they were required to run them daily. So this is a very dangerous, dangerous thing, because repetition makes people believe it. I just produced an event in Miami on the 8th of February called Democracy Lives in Miami. And when I was here, Rabbi Saul Schiff, who was one of the participants in this group monologue that I directed, remembered something that I had forgotten. And he said, when Hitler first began, they thought he was a joke. That sentence out of his mouth really bothered me.
Yeah.
Because that's what the media thought about Trump, and that's why they gave him this endless filleting through the election.
Yep.
Because they thought he was a joke that could never win. And, well, now,
and he was ratings
we're seeing
gold.
What we've got.
And he was ratings gold. I mean, CNN was shameful. They'd show, you know, the empty podium in the corner until he came on and carry every speech and every rally because of the curiosity factor, because he got ratings for them.
Yeah, and made them $100 million more in profits in the election year. That's what it's all about. We don't have editorial people now that are running these networks, the cable networks, because they are news journalists or news editors. We have the boardroom telling the news editors what they should run based on, is it getting clicks? Is it getting repeated? What's, you know, this is worse than if it bleeds, it leads, that was said in 1989. This is far worse than that. This is, if it sticks, you know, then that's all they care about. And once it sticks, they can make money with it. They all made money on Trump endlessly. And they're continuing to do it. I mean, MSNBC is all Trump all day.
Yeah.
So it's pretty disgraceful. Now, thank God, there are a few of them. And I mean a few that I really adore. Ari Melber breaks it down brilliantly every day and does a great job. Joy Reid, except when she is fomenting Democrats to fight each other in in a Hillary-Bernie battle, is doing a fantastic job.
Right.
We have to stop fighting the battle of the last election and start realizing that our country really constitutionally is built on an unsatisfactory thing, which is called compromise. Compromise is unsatisfactory to everybody. Some people can call it a win-win, but the truth is that to legislate in this country and govern properly, because that's what we really need now, we have to accept that some people are going to walk away from the table unhappy and that nobody's going to get everything they want. The question is, will the many, you know, not the few, get what they need? And that's where this country needs to now elect progressive people more than ever.
You know,
because this is the future.
It is. And we are in primary season now. This is when we get progressives elected. This is why, you know, people talk about November. No, we're in it now. Tuesday, today's the last day for early voting in Texas. Tuesday is primary day in Texas. We are off and running. And it's so important that people be paying attention now because, you know, this is it. I mean, if we don't, if the Democrats don't take back the at least the House in 2018, I hate to think where we'll be by 2020. I can't even imagine at this point.
Well, that's exactly right. I mean, the truth of it is, I said it from the beginning. I think I said it on your show. The process of exposing this administration for the crooks they are was going to take 2 years. It will take a Democratic House to truly indict this administration.
Yep.
It will not happen in a Republican House because they live on motivated cognition. They don't believe truth. They believe a truth that keeps them sustained with each other and with their rich donors. But, you know, the truth I've been talking about now is that rich donors, whether they're Democratic donors or Republican donors, are all the same. They're rich.
Mm-hmm.
They made their money and they intend to keep their money. So Democratic donors are not angels just because they're Democratic donors. And Republicans raise money by extortion. You pay us and support us, and we protect you from paying high taxes, and we protect you. And it's a protection racket. It's right out of the mafia. Democrats actually raise money saying to people, give us money so we can do the right thing. Which argument do you think wins more money? This is not a no-brainer. So we've got to actually say something bigger than that. We've got to look at our donors and say, are you one of them, or are you on the side of where history is going to be? Because I promise our rich donors that when the pitchforks come out, and if we don't win in 18, the pitchforks will come out. It won't be pretty what happens when people lose hope. That's when we see violence. And the pitchforks will come out at Democratic donors' homes faster than they will at Republican homes.
Hmm.
Just saying.
Yeah, and the Democratic Party is not helping things much. I don't know if you've been following the story of the DCCC and how they put out a hit job on this candidate in Texas, of all places, Laura Moser, because she's a progressive. You know, Howie Klein is on my show every Thursday, and there's a disturbing trend with the DCCC, most notably, going after progressives, pushing, foisting upon us the Blue Dogs and New Dems, the most conservative of the candidates, when in reality, in a primary, they should stay neutral at best. So there's a lot of and I got your point about Joy Reid fomenting discord between, you know, the Bernie and the Hillary people. That's got to stop. But we've got the party itself and the leaders within some of these factions basically doing the same thing. You and I want the most progressive Democratic Party we can get. They're saying, no, give us the conservadems. And it gets more and more difficult for me to say, after the primary season is over, you got to vote Democrat no matter what, because the alternative is what we have now. And that's untenable.
It is completely untenable at what we have now, but it is equally untenable. And I agree with you completely. If we elect people that don't represent the many is progressive. Mm-hmm. The many are people that believe in a safety net, that believe in good jobs. You know, I'm horrified. I mean, the day that they came out with their messaging platform of a better deal, Michael thought, my husband thought, I was going to explode, and we almost lost our television because I threw my shoe at it.
Oh, God.
I was so angry because a better deal. Who did they pay hundreds of thousands of dollars for that piece of shit? You know, that's like, really?
That's
the good,
from
the deal we have now is good?
Right.
I don't think so.
The
number
movie,
one.
The candidate.
And, yeah, and why would we use the word deal at all?
Yeah.
Because, you know, we have someone in the White House who wrote a book with the word deal in it. Why would we give him the airtime? It was stupid. It was inept. And it's why I'm no longer working for, I never have, but I turn down contracts for the DCCC. I won't do it. I won't work for these people because I don't believe they have all of our common good at heart.
Right.
I believe that they're taking the easiest way out, which is to find candidates that can self-fund.
That's right.
That's the big thing, you know.
If
you can raise money, you must be a candidate. That's bullshit. What do you stand for? People do not go to the voting booth to vote against. They go to the voting booth to vote for something. We have to have a center that they vote for. And I believe that center is progressive. Mm-hmm. I believe that center gives them good jobs. I believe that center gives them universal health care. I believe that center makes them feel like the deck is not rigged against them by big corporations and big banks, and that doesn't destroy people's right to organize. That's what I believe in, and I will stay strong in that because that's what we need more than ever.
Right. No, that's exactly what we need. And the people who listen to this show, the people who are, you know, tuned in, get it. It's getting to the other people, the ones who get the fundraising emails from the DCCC, who see that they're now endorsing candidates who have A ratings from the NRA, or who for whom choice is not an issue, a woman's right to choose. These are the things that frighten me, and I don't understand why they're Democrats. If that's how they feel, you know, why not just make the change and go across the aisle and become Republicans and let the Democrats be Democrats?
Well, it is time that we held a party accountable. The Republicans are accountable only to one thing, which is their big donors. Their party is built on three tenets, and if Trump has his way, he will be a true Republican because he is only caring about the rich, number one. Number two, he is clearly got a shrine in the White House to Mars, the god of war, because he's doing everything he can to put us in war. I mean, this creating a trade war today is the stupidest thing he could possibly do. I am hoping that Gary Cohn, who used to be a conservative Democrat, has the balls to walk out of the administration because he was only there to keep him from doing the tariffs. And I believe the tariffs were, like everything with Trump, an impulse decision, nothing else. He needed to distract. The noose from Mueller is tightening around his neck. He knows it. Hope Hicks has run away because she finally couldn't take it. Well, Hope Hicks would never had a spine to begin with. Good luck in the private sector, Miss Hicks.
Right.
But I just have to say that we as Democrats have to hold our party accountable to the things we believe in. This is opportunity for all, not for some. This is, you know, e pluribus unum, you know, and that's what we really do stand for. You know, I don't understand how Democrats do this. I fight with them when I'm in Washington and I have the strength. I fight with them. Otherwise, I just leave them alone. But, you know, it's going to be very interesting. A week from today, I will be the speaker after Elizabeth Warren speaks. Ooh. She's opening the strategy summit.
Nice.
Which is great because that's going to be the point of view that I always make about we are a progressive country. That's in her stump speech. She'll be making that.
Mm-hmm.
I will be getting up leading the message section with Anat Shankar Osorio, who I adore.
I do too. Send her my love, please.
I will. And Celinda Lake.
Oh, wow.
And I get the first 5 minutes to talk about the fact that this is the year of women. Women are what is going to save us. It is my belief. I support women candidates before I support male candidates because I'm tired of the testosterone-driven territorial imperative that men operate on. This is craziness. We've got to get to a place of real community, and there is no one poised better to do that than the progressive women that I know. And so Women Donors Network is launching something today called Way to Win. And this is building a coalition of young people, people of color, and women with a field campaign to win in states like Arizona and Texas and Florida. And this is a very interesting project, raising $100 million. Where are they spending it? Not on stupid television ads, but in the field where you really make a difference, in conversations door to door. When you empower your neighbors, believing in what you believe, you say to them, well, what are you going to do about it? And then they join and they're a volunteer and then they're out canvassing. That's what it's going to take to turn this around. Massive field work from communities. And that's what it's going to take to get millennials involved. They are the largest generation. They have every reason to vote right now because otherwise they have no hope. A few of them will do very well. Rich ones from rich families. Oh, yeah, they'll do fine. But the rest of them, oh, no, they don't stand a chance. They go to school. They come out in debt up to their eyeballs.
Mm-hmm.
They don't get a good job. And what does that mean for us? How does that make our economy better? How does that make our country better? It doesn't. It makes rich people richer. And eventually, it creates, you know, a state in which fascism can easily rise, which we're watching right now.
We are.
The gift of Trump, and I will say this honestly, the gift of Trump is that he ripped the mask of friendliness off of the fascists that live in America. He ripped that mask off. They are now who they have always been. The good news is they're not a majority. They're a minority. They are a small minority. They're not the majority. I don't believe that for a moment, no matter how loud they are. And it's time, more than ever, it is time for the majority to speak up.
Well, you know, you mentioned all the women. More women are running in this cycle than ever before in history. So we have more female candidates on the ballots than ever before. And we can probably attribute that to Trump and the outgrowth of the Women's March that also happened because of Trump. And maybe the same kind of backlash against his authoritarian leanings. I mean, when I hear him, I had a quote in What's News where he was talking about executing drug dealers.
I heard that. I was listening to you today.
It's just so frightening that, you know, the things that he's espousing that, you know, echoes of Hitler. I don't say that lightly. You don't invoke Hitler lightly, but Trump has it. I mean, the fact that he wants his Justice Department to do his bidding, to protect him, that's not what the Justice Department is there for, and he doesn't seem to understand that. This is another source of great stress for not only me, but so many listeners that I hear from, is just every day the stuff that comes out of this man's mouth or in his Twitter feed are just so disturbing that if we don't do something to get him out of there, there's genuine fear for the future of this nation.
100%. One of the things that's frightening me right now is that we're actually allowing a known anti-Semite to be laid in state at the Capitol.
I am so offensive.
Furious.
You're not
I mean, it's just horrific. You know, people can say what they want, and some people will say he was an important person in their life. That's fine. He is on tape during the Nixon administration as being an anti-Semite, and his son is far, far, far worse. The reality of this is that we are fomenting that kind of hatred through our institutions. I was enraged by that. I can't even begin to talk about that, because it made me so furious. But now with Trump doesn't know what the Constitution is. He's a transactional president, mm-hmm. and the transactions are all about him. And, you know, I have often said that Trump didn't learn at an early age that masturbation is not bad, but you're supposed to do it by yourself in your room, not in front of people. Because that kind of defeats the purpose.
And not demand of people that they do it to you in public.
Right, exactly. Oh, he's the perfect man that wears the raincoat showing off. There's not much to show, but he shows.
Right.
And it's just disgraceful. The policies don't have any basic substance to them because he's acting transactionally in the moment. I mean, we just have to look at every one of these quote-unquote listening sessions, and we see what he's doing. He can reverse himself in a moment because he doesn't have anything to which he is attached.
Right.
And that's a scary thing. But what he is attached to is keeping that 20% of people who are fucking crazy anyway. I mean, face it, America, 20% of us is fucking lunatics. We wouldn't walk across the street to be near them. In fact, we'd move to another town mm-hmm. to not be around these people. Mm-hmm. Those people will need him to be convicted as a crook to actually fall away a little bit. And I would bet you that 10% will still buy some form of Trump media on a monthly basis to hear his voice. I expect that. But the idea that he is trying to create this embargo. I looked at the steel embargo, the steel tariff and aluminum tariff as a way in which he's saying, well, we have to make that here. Well, what would you make that here for, and why would you want that, unless what you're trying to do is go to war and thinking you can rev up a war economy? It didn't work in 1918 when we put tariffs in. It was an enormous failure. It led to the Great Depression. This idea is so economically unsound. So where is it coming from? It's coming from the fact that, you know, this man really does believe by himself he can run the entire United States government. And it seems as though soon he will be left alone to do just that. With McMaster leaving now, which, you know, I was never a big fan,
right?
But, you know, at least there was a voice of sanity there,
right? And the question is, who's going to come in behind him? You know, remember,
right.
It was Flynn before.
Reality speaking, I'm sorry, John Kelly has proved that he's a racist.
Yes.
John Kelly is not an even-handed, clear-thinking general. He's a racist and an authoritarian.
Yep.
Just and he's like just trying to make everything, you know, he is what they used to call the good Germans.
Oh, God.
And that's a frightening thought to think about. So this cast of characters is scary to me, and I see the implosion coming sooner than later. I mean, there was an article today I read. Someone said, not since Nixon walking around talking to the portraits has any president been left so alone in the White House.
Right. I think I saw the same thing. So how do we navigate the waters? I mean, it is a matter of waiting for him to implode and bring the nation down with him? Or the way I look at it is the first step is taking back the House in 2018 by the Democrats, as flawed as they may be, because it's our best because they have subpoena power. They can hold hearings.
Right.
They can get stuff done.
Right. We must get politically active on our side. We have to unify, focus, and organize. I call it my UFO school of winning. Mm-hmm. Unify, focus, organize. That's what we have to do if we want this back. And we have to do it right now, and we have to do it every day. You do it every day in your radio broadcast. People need to share your radio broadcast. They need to remind people that there is Nicole Sandler, there's Laura Flanders, there's Amy Goodman, there's Ari Melber. I mean, even Nicole Wallace is speaking this.
Yes, she is.
I mean, really.
Yeah.
Nicole Wallace is horrified. Not someone that was going to be at the top of my list of policy people I wanted to talk to.
Not at all.
Because we don't agree on much.
Right.
But on small d democracy, we completely agree.
Yeah, I think
she's horrified.
Some of the more powerful voices speaking out against Trump are voices that were very right-leaning, that still are in their policies, but they're horrified by what's going on. I think there are alliances to be made there. Before it's too late.
Well, there are. And the reality is we need to build this right now. So you're 100% right. Taking back the House, but also taking back state houses.
Yes.
I am proud to say that I am supporting Andrew Gillum for governor in Florida.
Yes.
I mean, let me tell you, he is fantastic. And I've known him now for 15 years. We worked together when he was just out of college. He is a formidable thinker. When he stands with students and against gun violence, he's not doing it because he's an opportunistic candidate. That's what he did when he stood up against Jeb Bush when he was in college.
Great. Hey, Joel, we're running out of time real quick. You'll have to introduce me to Andrew so I can get him on the show.
I will. He's fantastic. I adore him.
All right. Joel Silberman, it's so great to hear from you. I know my listeners are loving hearing from you today. Thank you so much for coming on, and I will see you tomorrow and give you a great big hug.
I can't wait to see you.
Me
all right.
Too.
Be well.
You too.
Bye.
And bye-bye. I'll talk to you later. Joel Silberman, you can follow him on Twitter at Joel Silberman and his Facebook group, Team Joel. And there you have it. Joel Silberman's final appearance on this program. It was March 2nd of this year. He sounded great. You know, he fought cancer valiantly. He worked up until the end, working on issues that we care about, training people, motivating them. You know, it sounds so cliche that, you know, why do all the good ones die? I guess we all eventually die. Joel was certainly one of the good ones. There is a group of people I mentioned that he died the first day of. Yes, I did get that hug. Thank you, Gina, in the chat room. I did. We had a lovely lunch together, and that was the last time I saw him. But I'll tell you, Joel is one of those special people that will stay with us. And I try to remember to keep his positive attitude. It's something I have to work hard at. But I'll remember his words forever. The Joel Silberman Fund is up and running. JoelSilbermanFund.org. I'll put a link to it from my blog at NicoleSandler.com along with this podcast. Thank you all for listening. Thanks for indulging me. I know I heard from a lot of you that you were looking forward to hearing Joel one last time. So there you go. And if you want to hear more Joel, you can always go to NicoleSandler.com, put Joel Silberman's name in the search box, and find him in previous podcasts. Thank you for listening. Tomorrow, Howie Klein will be here. We'll go through the election results and more. I'll talk to you tomorrow. Bye, everyone.